So speaking of guidance, here comes your guidance from the attorney who represents parents. Because there is some local control, I would ask that when you're looking at how you're going to roll this out, you look at a way to provide parents in your districts with helpful information, not the brief one-liner that there's been this threat at whatever campus. That's really not going to be helpful to them. And something a little bit further than, well, we can't reveal any specifics because of students' privacy. There's a difference between identifiable information, which of course you can't reveal, and helpful information that parents will be able to use to make the best decisions they can for their families. So if you are mindful about putting out whatever the notice ends up looking like, you'll save yourselves a lot of the stampeding and phone calling and whatever. So that would be the ask from this side of the bar.
And again, some resources for you to investigate. So the next topic is threat assessment. And you know, in my new incarnation. So when I was with HISD, it was awesome because you had psychologists on staff. So if a kid was threatening harm to themselves or threatening harm to others, they had a protocol for assessing the students and determining are they a threat and making referrals to the community. But there's a lot of difference between large urban district and very, very small rural district. And if you start, so when you say, well, have the psychologist assess them, they say, well, we don't have a psychologist. Now, I will say that it does appear that in rural communities there is a stronger, more reliance and more a more robust MHMRA response to school districts. But I can also tell you that if you start talking to a rural superintendent about social-emotional learning and wraparound services, you're going to have to back up because they don't want to hear it. But the requirement remains that, what do you do when you have a student who is, they perceive to be threatening other students in the school? And, so you have to make some adjustments depending on what resources are available.
Absolutely. I think we could spend the whole hour talking about threat assessment. I will say in our office, we're hearing the issues collect around a couple of different issues. One of the leading issues in this area has to do with what Hans is describing about just the variety of district responses and what districts are prepared to do around the state. Each of your districts that you're a part of and that you work with will find themselves in slightly different circumstances in terms of what they have access to, but also what their community expectations and standards are. Again, this is an area with a fair amount of local control. One of the issues that keeps coming up is the idea that when you look at Senate Bill 11 and you look at the description of the behavior that could be cause for a threat assessment, the description of the behavior is unbelievably broad. It is really inclusive of a number of different situations, including bullying, threats, and even behavior that's just cause for a disciplinary intervention. And reading the description the first time, I realized, oh, I would have been subjected to a threat assessment because I once went to suspension for, being late. Was that really cause for a threat assessment? I don't think so. So the statutory language is overbroad, frankly. So the local decision-making has to be, well, what are we really going to focus on? For those of you who have been able to sit on the sidelines while somebody from your district went to the training at the School Safety Center, then you know that part of that training is they actually ask the teams as they assemble at each threat assessment team for the campuses to define the behavior that they're going to examine. That's part of the the process of getting started. So it is, again, a great deal of local control. It's great not to have a particular mandate. Don't look at that statutory language, the really broad language, as a mandate that everyone has to have a threat assessment if they have done one of those behaviors. But rather, it's just a threshold. And then within that, the team is supposed to define the behaviors that they're going to examine. The districts that we've heard from are focusing on threats of harm to self and threats of harm to others, because even within that category, excuse my French, but you know, there's so many times the statement "I'll kick your ass" is made at a school that, if you look at it with any degree of seriousness, that could be a threat of harm to others. So even with that much narrower net, it still captures a lot of behavior that really is not likely to be followed up as a true threat. So there has to be a winnowing that happens by the threat assessment team or even by an administrator before the referral to the threat assessment team to determine whether something ought to go through that more serious process. There needs to be a way of documenting the fact that the referral was made or not made. I think the districts that are already working through these processes have some sort of rating system. I think that's advisable to be able to document that, you know, although the "I'll kick your butt" statement was made, it was not deemed to be an ongoing situation and therefore was either not referred to threat assessment or was referred and was given the lowest possible rating that doesn't require further monitoring. So again, establishing those systems and establishing the documentation for those systems is going to be key. TEA and the School Safety Center are collaborating right now on the rules that will design what's called the safe and